This Jocks 94.5 podcast is brought to you by Millennium Satellite and Video. Log on to msvnow.com. TV excellence everywhere. That's Millennium.
Three Man Front.
Well, we welcome you in to what is going to be a jam-packed three-man front on this Tuesday. Landrum, Pat, John, the entire gang is here. We got headlines. We got breaking news from all over the place, Pat.
It's finally happening. It looks like it's going to happen. For months, we've been talking about it. All indications are that perhaps sometime this week, UAB will formally ask the AAC if they can come join the conference. And in doing so, probably about five other brethren of Conference USA will likely do the same. And so the timetable when exactly UAB will now be an official member of AAC, a lot will have to be decided. But all indications are, Landrum, that something, that, again, that we all believe that it's the right thing for UAB moving forward, looks like it will come to fruition.
Found it. It was funny that our buddy Dennis Dodd from CBSSports.com wrote the story, but this time he included UAB. The last time he totally omitted them.
Yeah, and talked about what a great fit UAB would be, that it was a home run, you know, not a hire, but a home run get for the AAC. So basically, it looks like to me the AAC is going for the markets. You know, you're trying to replace Houston with Rice. Not really sure about North Texas because you've already got SMU, but you're going back into the state of Florida. It looks like they wanted to lock down the state of Texas. So what happens to Conference USA moving forward? You have to wonder. I think the Sun Belt's in a pretty strong position, but you have to wonder, like schools like Marshall and Southern Mississippi, what's going to happen to them with a Conference USA now that will lose probably the six best teams and schools that you have, especially in football.
And I like the way that they phrase it, that these six institutions from Conference USA, they're going to apply. But here's how all of this goes down, and we know the formalities and how it has to read. I think any team in Conference USA would want to make that jump, and probably all expressed interest in those talks that they had in those channels with whether it was Oresco or people in that league office where, you know what, hey, we appreciate your interest, but we're not interested. This is just merely a formality. But how many of those other teams would have been included had the likes of Colorado State, Boise State, and others said yes? Because that's why this is coming now. And it wasn't on the forefront of when we had that information released earlier.
Yeah, Pete Thamel in his article yesterday that kind of started all this. Dennis Dodd also wrote a piece last night for CBSSports.com. But Florida Atlantic, Charlotte, North Texas, UTSA, Rice, and UAB would be the schools that would be jumping ship from Conference USA to AAC. Obviously, Mike Oresco does not want to be the predator here. Mike Oresco wants to be able to take those applications, put it in front of the expansion committee, and then they will vote it, give it a rubber stamp. And then from that standpoint, then those schools from Conference USA will have to notify CUSA that they are leaving. And the price tag for that, Landrum, is going to be $3 million. So $3 million to leave the CUSA. What kind of money does that mean for UAB moving forward? I've been told by people in the know that UAB typically gets between $500,000 to maybe $750,000 to $1 million. From Conference USA, more like on the low end of $500,000 a year.
Correct.
So now when you take a look at what Conference USA is not giving them, an AAC will moving forward, at least $2 million right out of the gate UAB will see. The other schools still left in the AAC will get $7 million part of their deal, their current deal that runs through 31 and 32 with their television partners. So it's going to be ramped up for UAB. But I think this is a win-win. I think Andy Kennedy, I think Bill Clark, I think all of the athletics down at UAB will be extremely pleased with the competition and, of course, being able to be on a larger platform. Because let's just be honest, it's very difficult trying to find CUSA games and trying to find a big basketball game here or there. Again, I know everything's going to the digital platform, but CUSA has really had a problem in years past trying to find a partner that is able to elevate those schools in the conference.
Yeah, trying to find it like UAB on the stadium or whatever app you want to throw out there and having it as a part of the ESPN broadcast and the different platforms and the way that they can get it out, that would be welcome, as well as familiar foes. I mean, teams at UAB, like Tulane, for example, you get them a non-conference play, but how much fun is that just to think that you're going to get, you know, possibly a trip to New Orleans every other year?
Well, in the Battle of the Bones, I mean, that's
Battle
huge.
Of the Bones
I mean,
huge.
You just think back about the rivalry between Memphis and UAB in basketball before the football program at UAB was established, and then what the UAB football program and the Memphis football program, the battles that they had, Battle of the Bones. So, yeah, this is huge for UAB, and I look forward to finding out more details in regards to the time frame and when this will become a reality.
And maybe having an opportunity to go to the Naval Academy.
Yeah, watch a football absolutely. Game. Go to Annapolis and be able to have them. I'm a little disappointed that maybe Army was not even you know, in the mix for this. But, again, Florida Atlantic, Charlotte, North Texas, UTSA, Rice, and UAB.
That is great news for UAB. And, of course, we will keep you to date on anything that might come out of the American Athletic Conference. Also worth passing along, the USFL. Looks like tentatively they're going
to
come. And
you're
that's good
to
news.
Get your Birmingham Stallions memorabilia.
Yeah. That's good news, though, for the city of Birmingham, because the occupancy tax per night for the hotels that was passed in 2019, you're looking at $3 per room. You're going to house the entire league, all the officials, everything 40, here.
40,000 hotel nights.
Yeah.
And for those that remember the story that kind of broke about a week or so ago, but the BJCC, they have reached a tentative memo of understanding to relaunch the USFL. It will be in a bubble-like atmosphere that you saw the NBA. Now, again, fans will be able to go, but right. all the teams will be housed here in Birmingham, and there will be a Birmingham Stallions. That will be one of the eight franchises that will play football.
Here's the thing, too, Pat. You think about the timing and where that schedule is. If I'm thinking late May, I mean, can you imagine? Yeah, it's gonna be warm, but it's gonna be short weather. You go to Uptown, enjoy some cocktails, walk across the street, go and watch the Stallions, or, you know, honestly, it doesn't even matter. It's football. It's professional football. I can think of a lot worse things that you could be doing.
April 15th through July 3rd, that is the time frame for the USFL, 12 weeks.
I think that's an ideal spot because you're not in that spring window where there's so many other things that you're competing with. All right, so that's really, really good news.
We just got good news all over the place here in Birmingham.
Great news all over the place. We're going to be talking with Matt Moscona of ESPN Radio in Baton Rouge. Matt, of course, joined us, and he's a friend of the show. He's always very candid and transparent about LSU and what he hears, and he never tries to sugarcoat it. You're not going to call him a homer, because when he sees something, he absolutely reports it. He's been telling us this. He told us this SEC Media Days when we talked to him about what Coach O had to do to keep his job there in Baton Rouge. 9-3, probably safe. 8-4, iffy, but most likely retained. 7-5, definitely fired. Wins and losses, we'll talk to him about it. How much of that went into it? How much did Title IX come into it? How much did stories that have leaked and stuff that has gone on off the field? Stuff that has not been reported. Matt is going to give you the latest, because he is well-connected, and he obviously has those channels that he goes through, and I think you might be surprised at some of the things that have been happening around that LSU program for the past couple of years.
I don't think there's any question that LSU is going to swing for a grand slam, not a home run, but a grand slam. So Matt will give us the very latest of where Scott Woodward may be turning, what they're looking at. But again, this all ramped up after the UCLA loss, I was told, right after the Bruin loss. That's when folks at LSU said, you know what, enough's enough. We got to start talking about buyouts. We got to start talking to the money people, trying to figure out exactly what we need to do to get Coach O out.
Yeah, you got LSU taking on an Ole Miss team, and we have it right there at the number three man front on Twitter. It's always brought to you by our friends at Southern Pipe and Supply, but our Tickets for Less poll question of the day, what's the hotter ticket? Is it Tennessee taking on Alabama at Bryant-Denny, or is it LSU taking on Ole Miss there in Oxford?
Yeah, and the big question for Ole Miss is, will Matt Corral be able to play? Lane Kiffin said yesterday in his weekly press conference that he was doubtful. I mean, the guy, the way that he ran the football the other night and the injury late in that ball game, I talked to a couple people over in Oxford last night, and they are very doubtful that Matt Corral gets to play in that game. So what happens now? Kind of a laid-back Coach O. Now he's got his money. Obviously, it paid off last weekend against Florida. Will it do it this week in Oxford?
All right, we will talk to Matt Moscona now, ESPN Radio there in Baton Rouge, Locked On LSU podcast, and he joins us on the Bud Light Hotline. Matt, welcome in. First of all, thanks for taking time. I know it's been a busy time for you. Brother, we never questioned whether you had the most legit information, and I was just kind of going over the timeline for our listeners and Pat, because he was there as well. SEC Media Days, you said what Coach O had to do. But take us through, take our listeners through kind of the behind the scenes, and first we'll start with maybe the timing of all of this. Why now and making this announcement now?
I think to understand is that there's also precedent for making the announcement now with LSU's AD Scott Woodward. When he was at Washington, he had Ty Willingham there, who he inherited as a head coach. And in 2008, they made the announcement after the seventh game that Willingham would not return but would finish the season. So Scott, just as a principal, doesn't like to replace a coach midseason. When he was at A&M, he let Kevin Sumlin finish out that season before he fired him and hired Jimbo Fisher. So that's in part the reason. I think one other very obvious reason here, guys, there's just no obvious choice for an interim coach. When Les was fired, Ed had been a head coach. He'd been an interim coach. That guy isn't on LSU staff right now. So, you know, lacking an obvious interim choice, you know, keeping Ed Ogeron in place for the remainder of the season, doing it now also allows LSU full autonomy to go start pursuing candidates, because there's no longer any cloak of secrecy or doubt or whether or not they're replacing coach. They're replacing coach. So you can begin the search publicly in earnest right now. So there's a lot of reasons why it makes sense to do it right now, as unconventional as it may seem on the outside. But, yeah, guys, I mean, Landrum, you're right. We're at Media Days, and every interview that I did, people asked me two questions. Who's going to be the quarterback, and is Ed Ogeron really on the hot seat? And every bit of information, you know, reputable information I got during the summer was Ed Ogeron needed 9-3 to feel safe. 8-4 was iffy, depending on how it looked. And if he went 7-5, he was fired. And it was pretty clear after they lost to UCLA in the opener that they weren't going to get to 9-3. So buyout, you're raising the money for the buyout, beginning to put in earnest, put a list together. That all started after the UCLA game and led to what was an inevitability on Sunday.
In regards to the buyout, were you surprised that they're paying the full amount in regards to perhaps maybe making this a legal challenge and say we're going to fire you with cause and negotiate a smaller amount like they did Les Miles?
So, guys, I've seen Ed Ogeron's contract. The termination for cause section of his contract read like an encyclopedia. They could have fired him for cause if his shirt was untucked. I mean, I'm obviously being facetious, but LSU absolutely had a case to fire Ed Ogeron for cause. But I think in paying him his buyout, what you did was you're buying cooperation. Because if you fire Ed Ogeron for cause, you better be sure that he is going to fight you for his money. And if Ed Ogeron fights for his money, that means a legal case. And what that means is depositions, which means coaches and administrators testifying under oath, which means a discovery process, which means do you really want NCAA investigation, Title IX investigation, all of this potential nefarious activity for which you're firing him for cause being, you know, coming to light in a very public legal setting? I don't think so. I think LSU was quite content to say, here's your money, play nice for the next 2 months, and then go on your merry way. And Ed Ogeron was wise to accept that deal.
Taking you through the inner workings, the timeline of Coach O being fired there at LSU with Matt Moscona, ESPN Radio in Baton Rouge, also the host of the Locked On LSU podcast. He's joining us here on Three Man Front on the Bud Light Hotline. Matt, will you take us through the timeline? Because I think a lot of our listeners don't know, and I'm not specifically talking about this year. I'm talking post-national championship, 2019. If you can lay it out, all of the different things that happened that maybe hadn't been reported to help them fully understand the frustration that was with the people close to the program and obviously with the administration and athletic director Scott Woodward.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Landrum, after LSU won the national championship in January of 2020, you know, a month later, Ed Ogeron divorced his wife, Kelly, of 23 years. And I'm not here to talk about any person's personal life, but that is something sure. That's relevant to what transpired since. And from there, he made so many wrong decisions professionally and personally that manifest on the field. And when you continue to build this mountain of evidence against yourself, you need the result on the field to be strong enough to hold up the weight of all of that. And it just wasn't. I mean, we can talk about the public embarrassment of taking photographs in bed with women, you know, on a Sunday when many think he would be at football ops looking at film. He's at the pool, you know, with a woman in a bikini at a casino in Baton Rouge. So many other videos like that and pictures have surfaced over the last year and a half. And again, I'm not judging what a man does in his private life at all. The reality is when you're the head coach at LSU, you're the highest paid state employee, and you are the face not only of LSU football, but of the university. And you are going to be expected to carry yourself and abide by a certain standard. And he did not do that. Then on top of that, guys, last summer with the George Floyd protests around our country, you know, Ed Ogeron went on Fox News and said, "We love President Trump. We think he's doing a great job." And I'm not here to talk about politics either. I don't care about anybody's politics. But the reality is you have a locker room, which more than half of your locker room is made up of young black males who did not appreciate that. And it's now been, the story has been written now. I think Ross Dellinger wrote it at SI, where you know, some players went to discuss that with Ed Ogeron and wanted to do a march through campus and not practice that given day. And Ed Ogeron essentially rebuked them. And at that point, he lost his locker room. And I don't know how you ever get it back after that. He tried. They turned over half their staff. They got younger. They got more diverse on staff, which was a necessity. But I think in the minds of some of those players, he never got it back, and it showed the field. There's the coaching hiring missteps, the bringing in Bo Pelini, acknowledging you didn't even interview him. You hired Scott Linehan. Both those guys were gone after 1 year. You know, you're coaching for your job this year, and you hire two coordinators that had never done the job before. I mean, guys, all of those decisions, I mean, every single one of them just blew up in his face. And when you keep doing all of these things, and then, you know, we started to hear these stories about how he sort of reverted to Ole Miss Ed in the locker room, throwing chairs against the wall, berating staffers. I mean, all of those things, they can stand for a time if you're winning. But when you're sub 500 against the Power Five since the national championship, all of that just continues to build the case against you. There was no decision to be made. I mean, Scott Woodward, this was a must that had to happen before this program further deteriorated under Ed Ogeron.
Man, in regards to who's next, I'm hearing plenty of names, and you've got your finger on the pulse of things. So I just want to run across two or three different names, and you don't have to go into a long diatribe in regards to their biography or if they would be a good fit or not, but just whether, yes, it's a potential fit, no, it's a pipe dream, but I hear James Franklin's name. Be a good fit or not?
Very realistic possibility. I saw Vegas odds had him at like plus 950. Vegas isn't wrong often. They're wrong on that one. James Franklin, Mel Tucker, two minority candidates, that there is a very strong possibility that one of those men get this job.
Luke Fickell.
He is a name that I heard early in this process from someone I consider very reputable. I know at least one very powerful LSU booster has Luke Fickell at the top of his list, but my understanding is Luke Fickell would prefer to hold out for a job in the Midwest. And also because Cincinnati is going into the Big 12, he sees himself already as a Power 5 coach. So that would be – there's interest from LSU standpoint. I think that's a tough pull.
In regards to Jimbo Fisher, we heard him yesterday say, nope, he's happy. He's got ranches. He loves Texas A&M. What about Scott Woodward? Does he make a phone call just to at least ask his old friend if he'd be interested?
Nope. There is no interest on LSU's part. And it's not because Scott and Jimbo are great friends. Scott hired Jimbo at A&M, obviously. And Scott Woodward, one of his best friends, is Jimmy Sexton, who's Jimbo's agent. But I'm going to tell you guys, when LSU did that two-step with Jimbo back in 2015, the way that that negotiation transpired with Jimmy Sexton left such a bitter, foul taste in the mouths of so many admins and boosters at LSU that it was expressed to me with no uncertainty at all that LSU had better not even pick up the phone to make an inquiry into bringing Jimbo Fisher to Baton Rouge because of how Jimmy Sexton handled the negotiation in 2015. So I would say categorically, no, Jimbo Fisher will not even be considered for this job.
Dabo Swinney.
It fits the profile of what Scott Woodward does. He's a big game hunter. When Scott was at Washington, he went and got Steve Sarkisian, who then was hired away by SC. When SC tried to hire Chris Peterson and couldn't, Woodward got him away from Boise. Of course, Woodward hired Jimbo. He just hired Kim Mulkey at LSU. That's the type of hire that fits Scott Woodward's profile. I don't know if that's realistic. I don't know if you can pull Dabo away, but it's the kind of guy that Woodward probably picks up the phone and makes him say no.
Matt, fair or not fair? People that throw out Lane Kiffin, it's been reported Lane Kiffin has, through back channels, and those back channels apparently they get out somehow, some way, that he had interest, wanted to let LSU know that he was interested. Why would LSU hesitate on hiring Lane Kiffin?
Lane ain't half-stepping, man. That is the worst-kept secret around here. Through every intermediary he is making it known that he wants this job. And I will tell you guys, after LSU lost to UCLA, the first two names I heard from people at LSU were Lane Kiffin and Bill O'Brien. After LSU lost to Auburn, I was told Luke Fickell, James Franklin, and more recently Mel Tucker. Those are the five names I've got from people at LSU. The only hesitation on Kiffin that I'll tell you is, considering LSU is still in the midst of a Title IX investigation, like, this is going to be a squeaky clean hire. And I think there's some hesitancy about Lane's personal life and how that would play here potentially. You can't make a hire and run into a situation like Hugh Freeze at Ole Miss. It can't happen. So whoever LSU hires is going to be someone with a pristine record in their personal life. And that would be the one hesitation with Lane.
And it should be noted that LSU's new president, William Tate, who is a black man, would like to, when you throw out Mel Tucker, when you throw out also James Franklin, maybe making this a legacy hire, if you're putting all the other criteria together, if you can make it work and you don't get into a bidding war that you can't win with, say, a Penn State or maybe even a USC, it seems like that might be the home run hire to make everyone happy.
I don't know that Mel Tucker would be a home run hire.
James Franklin, I'm sorry.
It's Franklin. Franklin, I think, would be if you can win that bidding war. But that is something that I've said on a lot of platforms over the last week or so, Landrum, it's a factor that we weren't thinking that anyone at LSU was going to have to consider, because this was, look, Scott Woodward's a Baton Rouge guy who went to LSU and he came back here for this reason, to be close to his family and to be the guy who makes all of these legacy hires, including hiring a football coach at LSU. And LSU's new president has only been in that job since May, and he is undeniably inserting himself into all of these conversations. And he has a lot of people tugging at his ear, and I think it would be wonderful for the program and the university if they did make their first minority hire as a head football coach. That just can't be the sole criteria. It just can't be. If it works out that's the way and the path LSU goes, wonderful. I think what's more important with respect to diversity and inclusion is race shouldn't exclude any candidate. It doesn't mean you hire based on race, but it can't exclude any candidate. And I hope that's the path that LSU follows here. Now, if LSU lands James Franklin, I mean, I would drive to the airport to pick him up. I mean, I think that would be an absolute amazing hire. I mean, he's got a condo at 30A. He loves the Gulf Coast. He'd be certainly close from Baton Rouge. He got to win 9 games at Vanderbilt, guys. I mean, come on. Like, yeah. We're talking about? I mean, he managed to win at Vanderbilt. Like,
that's right.
We've all met him. I mean, he would be perfect for this job. Can they get him away from Penn State? Could they outbid USC? We'll see in time. But I think that would be a guy who, for me, he and Lane Kiffin would be at the top of my list.
In regards to the timetable, and you just kind of briefly mentioned that, you've got USC looking for a head coach. It's been kind of quiet on the West Coast in regards to what they're doing behind the scenes. But are we talking about week after the SEC championship game? What kind of time frame do you anticipate LSU trying to make a move?
LSU is going to play Texas A&M the Saturday after Thanksgiving. I would think within 3 to 5 days of that game finishing, they'll introduce a new coach.
Okay.
Pat, the time frame has been so sped up now because of the December signing period. You can't wait.
No, you can't.
You can't. I mean, and it's another reason why you make this move now, because it gives you the opportunity to go gauge interest, work through financials terms, what it's going to cause. So when the season ends, man, you have that interview, and boom, you make your decision. You run someone to the podium, and you get them recruiting. I mean, it's just it can't be something that drags. And Scott Woodward doesn't do big public searches either. This is not going to be Joe Oliva doing radio interviews saying I am the search and other nonsense. Like, this is a skilled, tactful, smart administrator who's leading this thing, and it will be a. It will be a much less public process, I assure you.
Who is the next SEC coach to be fired? Is it Dan Mullen?
Ooh. Okay.
We nominated Dan Mullen and Mike Leach, but
half the league is either first or second year coaches. So, and Saban's going nowhere, obviously. I guess it would have to be Dan Mullen, right? But you know what's so odd about that? It's like he had them in the SEC championship game last year. I know the final record didn't look great because they lost the SEC championship game, lost the bowl game. But,
right.
I mean,
well,
he's the only one that gave Bama a game last year.
I know, but McElwain got him there twice.
I know.
Well, see, now it's perfect because Leach can go back to Pullman. Yeah, I mean, it's wide open for
exactly
him to go back.
Right.
Oh, jeez.
I mean, he said, hey, look, I made a mistake.
Wait, though. He didn't get the vaccine, did he?
Yeah, that's a problem, too.
I don't know, guys. I just think Mississippi State is so they're so content to be mediocre that they're not in a hurry to fire any coach.
Yeah.
So I don't think Leach is going anywhere after year two.
Okay. All right. Hey, Matt, always great stuff. Thank you so much. We always appreciate it, man.
All right, guys. Do well.
All right. Matt Moscona, at Matt Moscona on Twitter. Joining us on the Bud Light Hotline. We got Bud Light Game Night coming up from Topgolf, 5 to 7 on Thursday. Bud Light Crew's going to be there. We got Vol and Tide tickets to give away. We have UAB Rice tickets to give away and great Bud Light swag. You consider LSU a top 3 job in college football. We'll discuss it next on Three Man Front.
Three Man Front. Weekdays.
Right here on Jax.
Jax 94.5.
It's Three Man Front here on this Tuesday. Landrum, Pat, John Saber. We ask the question, is LSU a top 3 job in college football? 800-239-WJOX, 834-9450. You got Major League Baseball playoffs continuing tonight. The Red Sox playing well. Another Grand Slam. Record for Grand Slams of the series. Had 2 on Saturday, had 1 last night. They beat the Bo Sox 12-3. They're back at it tonight, but first we get Braves and Dodgers from L.A., 408, Jocks 2, 100.5 is where you can listen to the game. Walker Buehler, Charlie Morton. Braves with a 2-0 lead in that series. How about Donahue Auto and Pelham? Great pre-owned selection of not only cars, trucks, SUVs, but also luxury cars, maybe a minivan. Go and check them out. I did it a long time ago, and it's so cool to see a lot of the Donahue Auto tags that are riding around Metro Birmingham. A lot of you are taking the advice. If you haven't, do it. If you're in the market for a great pre-owned automobile, look no further than Donahue Auto and find them at DonahueAuto.com. Jimbo Fisher, as we alluded to yesterday in the press conference, very animated, and we're going to call this a straight brag or a humble brag.
So I guess I'll cut to the chase. Do you have any interest in the LSU
job? No, listen, I am. I'm gonna say this right now, It's in October right now. I love being here. This is the job I wanted. I'm being here. I got a great contract. I have an unbelievable chancellor. I have an unbelievable president. Unbelievable AD. That we're building something. We're recruiting great players. I really believe we're on the process of building something great. I plan on being here and fulfilling this contract and doing everything. My family has roots here. I got ranches here. I hunt here. I love everything about this place. There's nothing going on there. There's nothing happening there. And I don't be disrespectful to anybody else. I coached there. It was a great place. We won national championships. It is one of the best, best places in America. It's a wonderful place. I love being an A&M, and I plan on being an A&M here and fulfilling my whole contract. I love everything about this place.
Well, based on what we just heard from Matt Moscona, I think the LSU folks pretty much indicated to Jimmy Sexton that, you know what, we're just not going down this road this time. So tell Jimbo we love him, appreciate everything that he did for Scott Woodward coming to Texas A&M, but LSU will be going in a different direction. So I think that's why you heard what you heard yesterday. I like how he said that he's going to fulfill his contract.
Fulfill his contract.
Yeah.
But nothing after that.
His $9 million.
How many ranches are we
contract.
Talking about here? How many ranches? At least like Ted Turner. How many?
I mean, I guess is that his ranch that's in the Marty and McGee commercial?
I don't know. I was told when he had the little special after he took the job, and I think it was ESPN or SEC Network that he went horseback riding. Mm-hmm. I forgot who he went with. I don't know. Was it Marty Smith that was on a horse? He was riding around. I was told no, that was somebody else's ranch, and the horses weren't his. But I don't know. Good for Jimbo. I guess we got $75 million guaranteed and a suitcase full of money that you brought from other stops, you're probably in pretty good shape.
Yeah, probably got about 300,000 acres there right outside College Station. I don't know, but yeah, I think the way it went down before about Jimbo, just do not think that the folks at LSU want to go down that road and they're going to go elsewhere.
Where is this LSU job nationally when it comes to everything, being able to pay?
See, I personally don't think it's a top three job.
Okay.
That's just me. Top three job in the SEC? Yes. Nationally? No.
Okay. What are your reasons? And it's so hard when you get into ranking and listing, but your reasons for LSU not being a top three job?
Probably the locale. To me, there's other places around the country. I definitely would put USC ahead of the LSU job. I still think the Florida job is ahead of LSU.
Really?
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of great recruits in the state of Louisiana.
Yeah.
There's a lot of great recruits in East Texas. There's a lot of great recruits along the Alabama and Florida panhandle that like to go to LSU. But for me, because of the recruiting base and what is made available, I still believe Florida is a better job than LSU.
And the only reason that I don't say Florida, Pat, well, There's a couple of reasons, but I do have LSU being a top three job. And the first reason, though, is you are the only show in the state.
That's true. You do not have the checks and balances.
That's right.
You don't have the checks and balances like you have in Alabama, like you have in Florida, like you have in, I mean, think about South Carolina. Now, granted, South Carolina is a little bit below what Clemson is currently. But you at least you've got two schools in the state that you kind of compete with.
Right.
And they're in LSU. They're all by themselves. There's nobody kind of checking them.
Well, and I think Alabama's the same way. But you don't have – now, the off-the-field stuff with Coach O, that's not what led to getting him fired. That just helped, as Matt Moscona described –
It just sped up the process.
Add to the resume of the negatives.
Okay, if you don't mind me asking, then you give me your top three.
Alabama.
Okay.
I'm going to have LSU, and I'll throw in USC.
But you have LSU as the second best job.
Yeah.
Ahead of Ohio State.
I'll put them ahead of Ohio State.
Ahead of USC.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep. And I think maybe the reason I don't even want to go down that road with Ohio State, but we can go down that road. But for time purposes, no, I wouldn't have them. I'd have them in my top five.
Okay.
Let's go to Chris. He's in Birmingham. Chris, welcome to the three-man front.
How you guys doing this morning?
Doing
good.
Well. How are you?
It's all good. Let me say, we gotta have in the Bama fan base, we gotta have Matt Mastona on us because he keeps it a bill, man.
He keeps it real.
Like it is.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Especially when you talk about the whole social injustice thing with the George Floyd protests and stuff, because even Saban realized that was the time that you can really unify these guys and gather up your team and you have really form a brotherhood compared to like how it is now, I guess. Like that last year's team, like that was like they were legit crying when the center went down, tears. Like it was like a just everybody just loved each other a lot, I guess. As far as the LSU job, it's going to be a highly touted job because it's LSU. And what do you guys think after that, with especially with Matt Mastona just standing like it is?
I've said it. If you're talking about who the potential hire should be, and I've said this for weeks, I think James Franklin's a home run. You're going to be competing with Penn State. He makes north of $5 million a year. I do believe for other reasons, James Franklin liking this part of the country, the ability to recruit to LSU would be far easier. And getting back into the SEC, you're going to have to recruit with USC. You're going to have to compete with USC as well. And USC, there's reports that they really want James Franklin. But you got to weigh it out. Do you want to go and live in L.A. and live that life? And I know people laugh, but the cost of living and taxes, that's a lot more there. And the dollar goes a lot further in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And getting to that place in 38, that's going to be a chore.
And what about the whole idea of just like reading the whole social world and as far as the host of that reading the whole world as it is as compared to the whole social justice thing? What do you guys think about that? Like, you got to read, did the coach not read the room well or?
Well, my personal opinion is that once he won the national championship, he thought he was untouchable. He thought, you know what? I've just brought a national championship here to Louisiana. I'm about to get a divorce, my lifestyle, I'm going to get a contract extension. And just like a lot of people, whether you're a football coach or you get a big promotion at your current occupation, whatever the case may be, if you are not grounded on the floor in regards to what you think about the future, then you know what? It's going to get away from you fast. And I think that's exactly what took place with Orgeron. And I agree with you. I think he took his eye off the ball and he couldn't read the room well enough anymore because he was not taking care of those little things that got him into the position to at least play and obviously win a national championship.
I mean, even Cuba Hubbard didn't even want to play because of what happened with Oklahoma State. So reading the room is a pretty big deal, I guess.
No question. Thanks for your call.
Thanks, Chris. We appreciate it.
Dabo Swinney has now commented on the LSU job. And when we come back, we will tell you the very latest from Clemson, South Carolina. Could this be a name? Is this going to be the big figure that they're going to swing for? We will tell you what Dabo Swinney just said about the LSU job when we come back on Three Man Front.
This is Three Man Front.
1048, Jocks 94.5, Pat Smith, Langelum Roberts, John Saber on a beautiful Tuesday. Thanks for making us a part of your day. Coming up at noon, it's the Matt McLaren Show right here on Jocks 94.5. NBA season opener is tonight. It is back. Get to Twin Peaks for the official tip-off of the season as the Nets take on the Bucks at 6:30, followed by the Lakers versus the Warriors at 9 o'clock. Twin Peaks is the best place for all things hoops again tonight. NBA season opener. Enjoy it there at Twin Peaks in Hoover. I mentioned the fact that Dabo Swinney has been mentioned potentially, Landrum, as maybe that home run grand slam type hire that maybe Scott Woodward is going to go after. Well, this morning, Dabo Swinney was asked on his name being mentioned on Bruce Feldman's list for the LSU job and LSU potentially wanting to swing big. Quoting Dabo Swinney, "I'm a big-time coach? Wow. I made a big-time list? Wow. This is the only Death Valley I'm concerned about. That's for sure." End of quote. He just will not let this y'all bus thing go, will he?
Nope.
Every time you turn, oh, it's just little old Clemson, you know.
Woe is me.
It's just little old Dabo, you know. I'm just a guy, you know. I'm just a guy that's on the sideline trying to win a football game. I'm a big-time coach? Wow. I made a big-time list. Wow. This is the only Death Valley I'm concerned about, that's for sure.
I mean, he could have at least said, you know, this is the only Death Valley, period, not the other one. You could have taken a shot at him.
He actually did acknowledge it, and you're right.
Yeah,
he should have.
So obviously he is trying to go there.
Huh. Reading between the lines.
So you're saying you considered it.
I'm just tired of that routine.
I am too, man.
I mean, Clemson is a big-time program, thanks to Dabo and what they have done, and they've won national championships. I mean, you're there, man. Why do you have to keep acting like, well, people can't find Clemson on a map? It's just bogus, man.
It was probably somewhat cute to some people. When Clemson was winning national championships or appearing in the college football playoff every year. But now, when you've dropped a couple of games.
And you're an underdog this week to Pittsburgh.
And you've looked absolutely terrible, even in your wins. Then I think it just comes off as very just tired. Come on, dude. Come on, Dabo.
I mean, you were really the first one about, what, 2.5, 3 years ago. You took every opportunity you could to take a shot at Dabo and Clemson.
It was more Clemson.
It wasn't anything personal. It was just the fact that the football team didn't play a very good schedule, and you kept hearing this same bogus material.
And guess what? And I owned up to it when Alabama had played a much tougher schedule, had looked more impressive in doing so, and they squared off in a national championship game. And
Clemson took care of them.
Clemson took care of business. Gave it to him. Gave him his props. So at that point, if you're Dabo, just quit with the whole woe is us and the Roy bus and all of that stuff, man. Just stop it. Stop it. Yeah, you've done a great job. Why don't you just say, I'm happy where I am? Because I think that Dabo, that is one of those situations. And
he's insecure. I mean, let's just face it. I mean, that's exactly what that quote said. Oh, I'm a big-time coach? Well, if you go to the bank every 2 weeks, I think that pretty much dictates to you that you're a big time coach.
Yeah, $10 million a year?
Based on the fact of what Clemson is paying you?
Mm-hmm. Oh, no doubt. Going back to the squeaky clean hire. And Dabo, that would be a squeaky clean hire. Let's put that out there. But, I mean, the stuff with Lane Kiffin, number one. I don't know, and this is nothing current. He has matured as a coach. Still don't know, and I don't know. I think you have to consider, though, personal life and off-the-field stuff, especially coming off of what you just dealt with Coach O and some of the things that are coming out. Do you not agree? You've got to consider that if you're an administrator. You and I both know that there's stuff that never sees the light of day, and it's college football coaches that – you think, oh wow, that guy, he is a awesome human being that has skeletons out there, that has things that have happened where he's not the squeaky clean guy that you think he is. Now, some people might point to James Franklin and his time at Vanderbilt and some of the things that not him personally, but happened on his watch. A lot like we do with Urban Meyer and the 54 arrests that happened while he was there. Now, it was not to near that extent with James Franklin at Vanderbilt. But there were members of his football team that things happened while they were on that football team.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to be held accountable for.
I highly recommend you going back and listening to the Matt Moscona interview we had with him about 30 minutes ago. And you can catch that on the Three Man Front podcast. As a matter of fact, it's already been tweeted out by jocksfm.com because he talks about the president of LSU, a brand new president who has already kind of let it be known to Scott Woodward and the people down in Baton Rouge that he is going to be an active participant in what's going to happen with the hiring of this next football coach. Whether that's good or bad, take it for what it's worth. I mean, it's just like the Auburn situation. The Auburn president decided, you know what, that he was going to be involved. Granted, Alan Green was ultimately going to be the person that was going to make that hire, but he was actively involved, was he not, Langer?
Yes, but if given LSU's situation, with the Title IX stuff and everything that's going on with that university, that does not have to do with wins and losses, I think you're being responsible by not removing yourself. You have to weigh in on the hire. You can't leave it up to, and I'm sure he trusts Scott Woodward, but you, in this situation, you can't do that. And while I was saying that I think James Franklin would be, if James Franklin was orange, it wouldn't matter. And race should not dictate who they hire. But if you're trying to check all the boxes and the criteria that have been put in place by the president, the athletic director, and the boosters who just paid $17.5 million to buy out a contract and are going to pay millions of dollars to hire a new coach and a new staff, James Franklin, he checks all those boxes.
This is Three Man Front on Jax 94.5.